I know them.
Yeah.
Sandra Chita.
Yeah. He's great, yeah.
He's still alive?
I think he is.
Good.
But they're really about, like, putting cushions under your legs and chopping you up. And
so whatever you need. Whatever you need. Hey, why don't we bow? We all know how to bow in here. We may as well do it. So I came armed with a lovely teaser reading. A reading to tease your mind and to tease mine. This one is called Sacred Action. This book is great. It's Ocean of Dharma, and it's one quote from Trigam Trungpa for each day of the year, 365 quotes. So, but they only number it, you know, 1 through 365. They don't give dates. So right. I've actually dated mine.
I was thinking of doing
so I can
that.
Turn to June, you know, I can turn to the date.
There's an app that you can put in your iPhone that'll tell you which day of the year it is. So
oh, is that true?
I don't know.
Sure there is. This is the 202nd day of the year.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is 244. Sacred Action. We should regard everything that we do as very important. Not a big deal, but very important. Whatever we do is sacred action. Sacred action is not necessarily something magical or God-ridden. It is the possibility that whatever we do could be shamatha vipassana ridden, ridden with mindfulness and awareness. There is always room for precision. There are always vipassana possibilities, possibilities of awareness in whatever we do. Nothing is regarded as unsuitable, which is very helpful. So please pay attention to everything. When we don't let hope and fear, liking or disliking, come into the picture, when we actually taste the bread and butter in our mouth, when we don't let passion and aggression enter into it, at that point, we have the perfect opportunity for realizing awareness. Then eating a good piece of bread with nice butter on it does not produce any karmic seeds or debts. That is how, even at this level, we can actually reduce samsaric confused possibilities and free ourselves from future karmic possibilities.
You will contemplate that till 9 o'clock.
Say a little library.
Say
yeah. So I did think actually it'd be nice to take a line and contemplate one line from this. And we could take this line. It is the possibility that whatever we do could become shamatha vipassana ridden, ridden with mindfulness and awareness. There is always room for precision. So why don't we just take, let's see, it's a lot. There's always room for precision. Okay, here's a better one to take. There are always vipassana possibilities, possibilities of awareness in whatever we do. There are always vipassana possibilities, possibilities of awareness in whatever we do. We start with just the words. There are always vipassana possibilities, possibilities of awareness in whatever we do.
What is vipassana?
That's awareness or clear seeing. So we just say the words over and over. always possible, posture of possibilities, awareness possibilities in whatever we do. Then you start to think to yourself, what does that mean? And you start to think about, bring in whatever you need to bring in to try to understand the meaning of those words. And then the next step is to drop the words and just remain with the sense of the meaning. And then drop that and just rest in the space of having contemplated. Okay. So I was thinking it might be nice to just break into dyads too. And we'll go into this more deeply. So once you're in a dyad, maybe you and me and you two and you two. Okay.
I'll say it works. I can do this without spilling my teeth.
So choose who's one and who's two. Okay. Who's number one and who's number two?
I'll be one.
Okay. And now the question is, how do you experience awareness and the resistance to awareness in your life?
I tell you.
No, I'm one.
Oh, you're one.
You can take a minute to think about that.
Interesting.
Okay, so what did you notice? What came up for you? Anything you want to share with the group would be helpful? We'll just discuss it.
Well, what came to me in the contemplation was something about freshness.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for me to judge. Well, I'm thinking sort of future thinking. But, oh, I've got to talk to this person and I really don't want to do that. You know, that this sort of judgment before it even happens, or judgment when I'm in the midst of it. And with this idea that it actually could be for my, that whatever's happening could be for my benefit, that I can actually learn something from it, and maybe the other person could, that there's then, and I think he says it in there, then it's all good. He said something like, it makes it easy, or I forget exactly what he said. But just, that's good, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what came up in the contemplation.
Great. Hmm. Well, one thing that occurs to me from what you were saying, I'm sorry, your name?
Lee.
Lee was saying to me, was actually while I was sitting, something was occurring to me. That always happens when you're supposed to give a talk, you know. While you're sitting, things are kind of percolating, mm-hmm. that you might say or something. Mm-hmm. But the thing that kept coming up to me is, what is it that, when we say let go, what is it we're talking about letting go of? And I was thinking of that over and over again, and it occurred to me, because I found that to be a very deeply relaxing session for me today. Uh-huh. And I realized for me what that means, what that meant tonight, was to let go of whatever resistance to being fully present. Mm-hmm. Letting go of the resistance of fully relaxing and being fully here. Which are together, fully relaxing, relaxing the resistance. That's what you're doing, relaxing the resistance to being fully present. Mm. And it's interesting if you think of it.
It's that resistance that pulls us into habitual patterns. That's mm-hmm. what habitual patterns are, is resistance to the things the way they are.
Okay.
I feel like on a daily basis I resist that, and that's when I go into my habitual patterns.
For me, it's like what you're giving up is, for me, habitual, kind of like expectations. Like the two people that touched my heart the most today, one is a 10-year-old boy, and the other is a clerk in the convenience store. And I think, you know, that is, there's something really true about that. But, you know, that's the way it is.
And if you're not open to those situations, if you're walking around closed, you're not going to have that contact with people that...
Except I think I was in a fairly muddled state today. So somehow they managed to get through to me anyway.
That's great. Bodhisattvas.
Yeah.
Thank God. Or whoever.
For me, the idea of resistance to awareness was kind of... I didn't get it at first, because in my head I was going, well, I'd have to be aware that I was being resistant, and then would I be being resistant?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it was kind
aware.
Of, okay, let that go for a minute, and I finally got there with Bill, but I think it does kind of cut through things when you just talk about it as resistance to being to being here now, basically. And I think it's distractions, you know, it's the anxiety or the, I have to, you know. Mm. I was saying to Bill that I'm going through this phase where I keep walking into things and knocking things over and banging my head, cutting my hand, you know. It's a little bit of a walking disaster area at the moment. You know, and it's because I'm not here. I'm going, I have to go there, or I have this thing on my mind, or whatever it is.
I saw that visually one time. I don't know where I was, on a campus or something, and I saw a person walking by, and I knew immediately that their mind was ahead of their body. I don't know how I knew that, or what precipitated that, maybe energetically or something, but it was very clear that they were not in their body. They were 10 feet ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
I saw someone like that, and there was an actual physical sign that was happening. Mm. You know what it was? Yeah. It was a guy in a convenience store late at night, and he was an older man, and he looked like a professor, and he had a Q-tip sticking out of his ear.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I kid you not.
Whoa. Right? Yeah,
just in case.
Totally relate.
Uh-huh. It's dangerous.
But you said something that really made sense to me is being here without baggage. Say more about that for you.
The difference in being aware and not being aware is that, like, when we do something, bang into something, that the normal reaction is to get pissed off. You know, some idiot stuck that there, right? I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever, you know, if I'm falling, I'm thinking, you idiot.
Yeah.
And that's a whole lot of baggage that comes along with it. But if I'm falling, and then I just don't do that and just fall and realize I'm falling, and then I fell, but I don't have all the baggage that came with it. It must be the baggage that creates the karma.
It's interesting, because as you're describing that, you're describing something precise, seeing something precisely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there has to be so much gentleness in it in order to see it.
Yeah.
In other words, if you're doing that reaction thing of, there's no gentleness, so you can't be precise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? You can't. You have to have the gentleness, which is a relaxation with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a softness, a relaxation of getting in to being, to feeling what's there.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot of emphasis on feeling things these days in our community, to really paying attention to that.
Yeah, but, and that way you fall and perhaps you don't hurt yourself. Because it's the resistance to falling, that putting out the arm or the hand, that creates the broken wrist.
Right.
You know, if you allowed yourself just to go, I'm falling, I've had that experience.
Yeah.
I was on a trail and it was like dirt, which was good, but it was like, I'm falling, and someone had this sort of little voice that said, just fall.
Uh-huh.
Just let yourself fall. Yeah. Or going down, I fell into a river, and it was a fast river. And I was just getting the shit banged out of my butt and my legs from the rocks below. And I, in the midst of this, holy shit, what's going to happen to me? I said, just relax. And as soon as I relaxed with it, I stopped hitting everything that I was, going over when I was going down the river.
Yeah. Yes, life is like that.
It is. I had a very similar thing happen to me. I was walking up at Chabal Mountain Center, and I turned around, I was walking down a hill, and I turned around to talk to the people behind me, and my foot got caught like under a rock or under a root, and I literally started to fall, and I was very present, and as I fell, I just tucked my head down, and I rolled and ended up on my feet. And the people behind me said, well, you must practice a lot of martial arts. And I don't. At all.
Lesson one.
But it was like, and it felt very natural, you know. And it was all about awareness. That's it.
Giving I'm falling, in. I have to stop.
It's
like, I'm falling.
Giving in, but being completely present to what it is that's happening,
It's also what he was saying. It's the hope and fear and the good and bad.
Yeah.
It's when you're caught in the good and bad, and you're like, oh shit, I should.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. You
know, versus that shouldn't happen.
I'm falling.
Yeah, exactly.
Over the last 2 weeks, I've had a really interesting 2 weeks. So basically, for about 3 or 4 hours a day for the last 2 weeks, I've been training in a gym that they're MMA fighters, mixed martial arts fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Cage fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been training with them and doing everything they do. And I have a background in wrestling, which helps a little bit. But no idea how to punch or kick people. And, you know, most people there, my strength training methods are better than theirs, so I'm stronger than most people my size there. And you get mixed in with a lot of people, but I've gotten punched in the face with a thing on my face and with them with gloves on so many times in the last 2 weeks, and kicked in the shin. My shins are just so beaten up from it. And it's a lot of young guys with a lot of testosterone, and there's a lot of energy there. And part of the reason I wanted to do it is because I've been thinking a lot about how part of life is you have to be able to raise energy. It's wind horse. And you can use wind horse in it in so many different situations. And that was part of what I wanted, is like, can I use it with aggression without anger? And it comes and goes. Like, I've been angry quite a few times. It's a reaction to someone punching you or someone trying to hurt you, but they're not trying to hurt you out of meanness. I mean, maybe a little bit, some of them are. But you have to really work with that and not get angry. And sometimes it works completely. Like, it's just not, everyone's laughing and it's fine. But it's just been a really interesting situation. I had never been in a fight in my life up until these last 2 weeks. And these last 2 weeks have basically been like, I've been in a fight every single day. And it's been a real challenge to remain aware of my emotions and what happens with them and my desire to prove whatever it is I want to prove or not prove. Or, it's been really interesting.
That's the hope and fear.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I hope I don't get kicked in the face.
Or I hope that, you know, I just turned 40 and I hope I still got it, you know. I don't want to, it's been a big challenge for me to, I don't know, I'm getting older, you know, and I'm just now starting to feel it. And I know that's what a lot of it's about. And so I'm with these guys that are in their 20s and there's just so many things wrapped up in it. It's interesting. And it takes awareness to stay with it and then to protect yourself and then also to learn, because that's part of why I'm doing it too. You know, it's just a new thing to learn. It's been very interesting.
Yeah, nothing like getting older to bring compassion and gentleness to yourself and others. That's what I find. You know, can't do the things I used to do, can't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it is a practice in awareness for me. Awareness of, you know, all the judgment and awareness of all the fear and aware, you know. And without, I think if I hadn't been practicing this in the last 3 or 4 years, I would have been totally neurotic about being older and because everything changes so much.
Yeah.
In so many unpredictable and unpleasant ways sometimes.
Mm. And vulnerability, that's what comes up for me. Mm-hmm. And future thinking, future fear of, Jesus, am I going to wind up in a nursing home? I don't have kids. What, you know, what's going to happen to me, kind of thing. I mean, that's fleeting, but the stuff right in front of me is, I want to hike until I'm 90, you know? or walk. I don't care about hiking. I just want to walk, you know, until I'm 90. But that's not guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed.
Dang.
One thing that's brought up, though, for me, the whole experience, is that, and I haven't lost much physically. Like, I'm still doing pretty good. But mentally and emotionally, I'm better. And I really believe, I mean, this is just, I'm a walking corpse. I mean, this is just flesh. It's a fun tool, and you should treat it well, without a doubt. But it is not me. A good friend of mine once said, when I die, burn this silly costume and throw the ashes to the wind. And I love that. And so I look at it, and like, I'm older, and that's part of what I'm trying to deal with. But then I look at it, and I like me a lot better now. I'm smarter.
You know, that statement's a very, it's a good one, you know, and it's very Buddhist. We use things like that. But there's also a piece of it that, you know, for me, I think a lot of people end up having a slight aggression with it. The idea of, you know, it's I'm going to die, so it's kind of, you know, doesn't matter, or that I'm not, you know, I shouldn't cherish, I shouldn't, you know. And so there's an actual slightly maybe nihilistic element to it of kind of trying to find the not mattering part, as though it really exists.
I don't understand that, what you're saying.
Well, there's sometimes this notion that, like you mentioned before in our dyad, that you should do everything with complete, what was it?
The quote is, do everything as if it's the most important thing, knowing the whole time that nothing matters.
Yeah, the notion that nothing matters.
Carlos Castaneda.
Is a very tricky one if you're just thinking, trying to conceptually apply that to yourself.
That can be interpreted very...
This notion of nothing matters, very easy to turn that into a nihilistic statement. Yeah. That you know, if you look for that truth... Yeah. You could be rejecting the sense of meaningfulness and depth to your perception and the actual, you know, kind of sacredness. So it's not, the nothing matters part isn't a meant as a negation. It's not
or to
meant,
stand on its own.
Yeah.
You know, that it's so important and it's not. Is that in somewhere in between there is the balance of those. It's not one way or the other. It is
right.
It lives in the middle.
It's in the middle.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But what that is not being biased for or against. Mm-hmm. It's not trying to get rid of something. It's not trying to hold on to something. It's really getting out of your head and really fully relaxing with the experience of what's happening now. And I think that that's often misunderstood, that we're trying with our minds sometimes to, you know, get to that, get to one side or the other of it.
It's another cop-out. Nothing matters can be used as another cop-out.
Yeah. There's that, yeah, definitely. But I think it's very common, especially in Buddhism, to fall into... Like when we say let go, you know, everyone does this. You just ask, you know, make a gesture of letting go. People always do this, yeah. Let go. But actually letting go doesn't mean that. It doesn't even mean that something's going to go. Yeah. It actually means you're not holding on to that which is in the way of fully experiencing what's there. So that's what are you letting go of, you know? But the words letting go... People often feel like they have to do something called letting go.
Right.
And there is no such thing.
It's relaxing.
Right. It's actually relaxing. But letting
go. In the river, she, you know, stop fighting the rocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm in the river.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. But if I relax, you know.
See, the secret is you don't know what's going to happen, whether you're relaxed or not.
That's true.
That's the scare.
Yeah, that's actually true. Yeah, you don't know.
Well, what was interesting is, as I remembered my sandals on, but Dan remembers my sandals going down the river in front of me in the raft. But at that point when I relaxed, I saw a big rock in front of me. And I knew, because I've done, you know, captaining boats, I knew if I could angle myself and get my feet up against that rock, the river would swing me around the back of it and there might be an eddy. Uh-huh. There might be some place where I could rest.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what happened. I put my feet out, came around. I still traveled a little bit, but it was slower. And then the guy who was in charge of the raft was able to grab me by my, you know, life jacket and just haul me up and throw me in like a wet fish.
Didn't take the hook out of your mouth.
Yeah.
I used to climb a lot, and I guess like in my mid-20s, for about 5 years, that's mostly what I did. And there was always this thing, but I was never any good at it. And there was always this thing, if you're climbing, you have your protection in that. So you have your rope tied to you. You put protection in the wall and the rock, and that's what keeps you from falling to the ground. So you have to climb above your protection and get to a spot where you can set your next piece of protection. And what I would do over and over is when I was setting that protection and I was above my last piece, I would be so tense in such a bad position, and I would waste so much energy, and then I would get that piece of protection, and then I would just shift a little bit and find another place to put my foot or whatever, and then it turns out that I could have just stood there and did it. But I didn't trust that I could do that. Instead, all my fear went into trying as hard as I could to get that piece of protection. And then once I was satisfied I was safe, then I was able to relax. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what's hard about life, is you want to relax, but you have so many instincts defending because you don't know how it's going to turn out. Look how many times it happens where you're like, it always turns out. Just would have relaxed. Yeah. It always works out.
And we forget. Why do we forget?
Because of the unknown.
It's like, why doesn't that pile up and be like, that's right. Everything's going to be okay, Why isn't that evidence good enough?
That's called basic goodness.
How so?
You've already survived. Mm. You don't have to worry about, will I survive? You have survived. Mm. You're here. You're actually here. You can appreciate being alive.
Yeah, for your whole life, you survive.
Yeah.
Until when I die, that can be okay too.
Yeah. You don't know. it's really hilarious when you think about it. I think somewhere I saw recently that Gesagong has said, you know, make a list of all the things you've tried to make things right, and then how many times has it worked? You know, it doesn't ever work. Yeah. So drop it.
I have to say, when I was on retreat years ago at Dorje Kyungsan in the southern land, and you had to go out to the outhouse, and in the outhouse there was this wasp. I don't know if it was wasp nest, but there was a wasp in there, and I was peeing. I won't be graphical about this, but I was peeing, and I was, worried about that freaking because it was flying. I was worried about that wasp, and I suddenly, because I've been meditating all day, suddenly got it. I just thought, wow, whether I worry about it or not, it either is or isn't going to sting me.
Yeah.
It is irrelevant. My worrying about it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
And I just stood there and I did my thing and went back, and it was a real lesson for me in that moment.
Yeah.
Because usually, that whole way that you react to something that scares you and you think you're going to make it better by paying attention and doing the right thing, and actually,
it doesn't matter.
That's not it. Yeah, that's not what's going to make it work or not, help you or not.
Yeah.
It's funny.
That's one of the things I like most about getting older is the stuff that seemed like such a big deal when I was young.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you can just say, that wasn't
a big
problem.
Yeah, really.
You just waste all that energy worrying about these particular things.
Nothing matters, right?
Yeah.
There seems to be something about worrying that, at least my training, being a member of the society and my family, I suppose, that if you don't worry, that's the problem. Mm. That somehow if you worry about it, maybe you could figure it out or you could anticipate. Uh-huh. I have a friend who's anticipating the death of her mother and like anticipatory grief. That if you grieved enough beforehand, when it actually happens, you won't be as messed up, which is irrational. But
Well, there is something to knowledge. There's some balance here between the truth of relaxing, because, it's not going to help you to worry. So it's not about worrying necessarily, but it is about realizing that knowing something about the situation, you could be more skillful with it. Mm-hmm. And that might actually help the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? There is that.
Yeah. The Sakyong's analogy of riding on a horse, like a really good horseman or whatever you call him, their advice would be just relax. Yeah. But if you've never been on a horse and you just relax, you're
that
not
doesn't work.
Off the horse.
Yeah. Exactly.
You have to practice first.
You have to have knowledge, you have to know what it means to be doing what you're doing. Then, as you go, you can relax more and more. So Vinyasa says that it's, letting go actually is about, first you have to be synchronized, then you let go. Mm-hmm. If you're not synchronized first, letting go just becomes...
falling off the horse.
You have an accident, basically.
Yeah.
An accident.
When you say What do you mean when you say synchronous?
The example he gives is like a race car, a race car driver. They're so they know their car so well, they know the road so well that they can go 200 miles an hour without it being overly dangerous to them, because they're so synchronized with the vehicle, with the road, and the situation. Therefore, they can do something. They can actually give in and go really fast. Let go of the restraints of the idea of safe speed. You know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in that case, it makes sense to go faster, to let go. But if you don't know the car and you don't know the road and you go 200 miles an hour, you're being crazy. You're being a fool.
Not using intelligence.
Yeah, it's not using your intelligence. Mm-hmm. You're not synchronized with the situation. Therefore, it becomes extremely likely that you're going to crash. Mm-hmm. Because you're not fully there, fully synchronized.
So that's very interesting when you talk about worry, because I think sometimes worry is about trying to get yourself ready. I think that's what you just said, maybe. It's trying to get yourself ready, or knowing that you're not ready, but you have to be there anyway. So in that case, I think... because I'm in that, you know, I find myself in that situation with work or anything new thing you try, where there is some expectation to perform.
Yeah.
And I do try to let go in those situations, but I'm not letting go into nothingness. I'm letting go into my innate confidence. Or my innate skill, or my experience, or something.
Yeah.
Your trust.
Well, I mean,
trust.
There is something interesting about the fear element that makes you pay more attention. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call that worry, though. Worry is different.
Uh-huh.
But there's something that you realize you're going to be called upon to perform at a high level, and there's maybe an anxiousness or a fear that arises. That actually forces you to take stock of do I or don't I know what I'm doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't, you stop. I do anyway, and I pay complete attention to all the details before I go into that situation.
Yeah.
Because it's like a message. You get scared, and that's a message to pay attention.
Yeah.
You know. But if you get worried, if you have that feeling and you just start to worry. That's a whole different thing. That doesn't help you. It's in your head.
Right. Then you're not in the present moment.
You're not gonna.
You can't pay attention.
You can't pay attention. You're caught up in your mind worrying.
Fear is intelligent energy. I mean, if our ancestors did not have fear, we would be here.
It's true. It's true.
One more little example is just. This is so true of like learning to play a musical instrument, where you must bring to it enough focus and discipline in a way, you know. But to learn the skill, and then if you're like performing in front of a group of people and you get worried about that, then you're completely paralyzed.
Right.
It's hopeless. Yeah. So you have to just be roused. But then not worried, you know, and then you can.
That fear actually is really healthy.
Yeah.
The nervousness or fear kind of undercuts a complacency.
Yeah.
It puts you, it makes you, mm-hmm. it perks you up, it actually makes you.
Performance.
Aware. Well, I get it like, you know, if I'm teaching a level or something, oftentimes before going out to give a talk with a lot of people, I get that feeling of like, it's like walking into the room where the Vidyadhara was, you know?
Yeah.
It was a feeling of like just being completely naked and not knowing what's going to happen and feeling stupid or feeling, you know, all these things coming up, but basically there's just this edge of not knowing. It's so strong.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's not knowing. It's the unknown. It becomes very, very strong. And that actually, when you take your seat in that room, you really see the people there, and then you really connect, and then the talk happens. Because it brought you so much into the present, that's how it works.
It's like preparation. You're prepared.
Yeah, yeah. But even if you're completely prepared, you still get that fear.
Yeah. So isn't if we truly don't have ground, and life really is groundlessness all the time. If isn't it always dealing like if you know when the ground is pulled out, it's that feeling. You know, when someone you love dies or something. You know, all those situations where that happens. So. Take enlightenment. I know that's a big word, but wouldn't enlightenment kind of feel like that all the time, but yet with the confidence to stay present and move forward?
I think that's somebody who's enlightened.
It seems like...
I think we're touching on the notion of equanimity here. You know, like being set down the stream. That's a great metaphor for life. You know, you're tumbling down the stream, bouncing off all the rocks, and yet... You have equanimity doesn't mean that you're safe or anything like that. What it does mean is that you sort of have the belief that you will be able to get past the next rock. You know.
Dead or alive.
Yeah. Somehow. I mean, you know, there's sort of a almost a faith, if I can use that term. I don't
know. Yeah. Thanks. Well, like, you know, there's faith and then there's doubtlessness too.
Yeah.
Doubtlessness. Is that you don't even have to consider whether it will or won't work out. Uh-huh. It's fully, you're so fully synchronized that you can just fully relax in it, and you are learning as you go in that situation, and you know that you possess the necessary resources to do that.
Yeah, and there's no conclusion necessarily that you're heading towards. Like sometimes when I'd be teaching experientially, it would be what the students were doing, and so I had no idea what was going to show up. I had the bones of the class, but you know how the flesh came on and all that, I have no idea. But I had enough confidence in myself that whatever came up. Was what was supposed to, or something. I don't know.
You know, and I think that might be the saving grace to dying, actually. It's such a natural thing to do. When it comes down to it, I mean, when you're alive, you think of it as being this unnatural thing to die. But the actual process itself is perhaps a highly natural thing that you actually start to realize is. And because I've seen now many people die, people I know, and you know, and it does seem that they become, at some point, it's easier than being jealous about your husband or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend. Dying is not as difficult as some of the things, you know what I mean, once it comes to it.
It's like you're going down the river, you know, and maybe you gain confidence or something that this makes sense what my body is doing or whatever. This makes sense what my mind is doing, and it arouses a sense of confidence then.
Could be.
Yeah.
There's also the one thing we've always had throughout our whole lives is the present moment, and you'll have it when you're dying.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
true. Right. What happens after that, but you know, it's always the present moment. Right.
But the way that you experience that through your senses is changing so dramatically when you're dying. I think it poses many challenges.
Yeah. And also brings up all that hope and fear.
And the painfulness, you know, sometimes you're in a lot of pain.
Yeah. When you're dying,
well, the people around you are all
and maybe
out,
people around you are freaking out.
But there's a good deal of stuff that you get to let go of, like how am I going to pay the bills or how am I going to perform?
Don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, yes,
20-year-olds aren't going to date me up anymore.
Yeah. I've seen it. I've spent the last moments of two people's lives, and one of them was for, I don't know, like 6 months, and he really let go. He was happy. He was in a lot of pain, a lot of worry about dying, but he definitely, there was not much stress there. And he said that was why. He was like, it doesn't matter anymore. They can't take anything away from me.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to stop. Okay. It's almost 9. I have an apology to make that I got email.